Watching the Throne is presented by Film Colossus, where you can find in-depth analyses of movies, such as How Legolas is the Kobe Bryant of Middle-earth, and Why the Night Before is the Ultimate Argument for Legalizing Marijuana. Check it out at filmcolossus.com.
Everybody wants to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love, I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne, a lyrical analysis of Kanye West. My name is Chris Lambert, and Travis is not here today because he's off doing Travis Beanie things, but we have a storie, and this is our storie guest.
Hi there, this is Kevin, and I guess I'm a Kanye fan.
That's good.
For being on this.
It's a nice thing to be able to say out loud sometimes, because I feel like there's like...
It really is.
Times so. During the day where you're just like, I don't want to tell anybody here I'm a Kanye fan.
Oh, I try to prevent anyone from knowing.
it's a weird reaction that you can get for telling people like,
I
love Kanye's music, and they'll be like, oh, his older stuff, right? And you're like, well,
not even just like his music in general gets hate.
Yeah,
like they don't listen to it, so. What would they know? So, honestly, like, whatever.
Right. There's so many times I've seen on Reddit where people have been like, I haven't listened to this guy's music, but I just know he's a jackass, so his music's going to suck. I'm like, well, I'm glad you know everything. Like,
that's a good response, yeah.
Right. Well, so when did you first encounter Kanye's music, and what were your first impressions?
All right. I would say started fall of 07, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was in high school at the time. I was very hesitant to listen to American music at the time. I actually grew up, I never really liked music that much growing up. And it was until I became a teenager that I started listening to it more. And at that point, the only music I really loved or really liked, enjoyed to listen to was Chinese music.
Mm.
Surprisingly. So and then so at that time I was like, you know, growing up in America in high school, and I'm like trying to branch out and listen to other kinds of music. And so he was one of the first ones because he was popular at the time, and some of the kids I played basketball with listened to him, so they're just like, you should check him out. Yeah. And so Graduation, first album I listened to.
Nice. Yeah, because in 07 that's right when Graduation had come out, and mm-hmm. what, like, Stronger yeah. was playing everywhere. And...
Yep. Definitely Stronger, yeah. It sold really well. His best-selling, best first week album. So, yeah, it was definitely at a really hype time of his artistry.
He was kind of king of the world. That was before all the Taylor Swift mm-hmm. stuff. That mm-hmm. was when it was just like...
He was king of the world, oh yeah. Yeah, that was the year he took out 50 Cent.
That's right. They had that
just
big, like,
took him out, you know?
Same release day feud.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Well, so you're starting to listen to Graduation. Were you just listening to the singles at first, or did you just put on the album and...
I did listen to the full album a few times, and I only... At the time, I was still new to all this, and I kind of just gravitated more towards the hits, the singles. So I like Stronger a lot. I thought that was very progressive. You know, I've never, obviously at the time, I've never heard a hip hop song sound like that. So, you know, I love that song. Then I think the other songs, you know, Can't Tell Me Nothing, Good Life was all right. Good Life, I think, was overrated, in my opinion. Can't Tell Me Nothing was great. Flashing Lights was great. Big Brother, Homecoming, oh my goodness. Now that I think about it, yeah, no, that album definitely stuck with me. Definitely, like, the first hip-hop album I really loved, I think.
Yeah, it's, like, transcended to where you're just like, this guy's doing all of this stuff on just this mm-hmm. one album? Like...
Yeah, Exactly. It's and it's so at the time it was, you know, hip hop had this stereotype, right? A certain stereotype, and this album was different, and that's, I think that's why I liked it. You know, it's very unique.
Now, when you were really enjoying the album, did you immediately go back and listen to a bunch of Kanye's previous albums, or is it something where you just kind of stuck with this and didn't really dive much into Kanye West yet?
I kind of just went with the seasons at that time. So I listened to Graduation for probably a good like 3 to 4 months. And then at the same time, I was listening to like some other stuff as well, some other artists. And then I think it was really in 2008 that I started I went out and just looked for a lot of older things. So that's when I listened to College Dropout and Late Registration.
Ooh, and how did you feel those compared to Graduation? Were you just like, these are so much better, or this is just all great?
I thought they were all great in their own way. And looking back at it, obviously, I've listened to them so much more since then that, you know, back then when I first listened to it, it was so new, you know, so new to me because I didn't listen to that much hip hop, to be honest. I think I listened more to like Linkin Park and
hell yeah,
rock music, and you know, some other genres more, like you know, just the catchy radio stuff. I listened to like Maroon 5 and whatever, like whatever was catchy, really. But hip hop, to sit down and listen to like an album, that's a very unique experience. So yeah, College Dropout I thought was good. Late Registration, I didn't like it as much at first because I just wasn't used to the orchestra instruments. Mm. You know, like that was unique. That was so unique in itself, and I didn't even realize it. It was so different that it was harder to enjoy for me at the time. But I love it now, but at the time it wasn't easy to digest, I think.
Right. I had the same kind of experience when I was in college in 2007. And Kanye, the same thing, was like everywhere. And I was like, I'm going to download this guy's music and listen to it. And at first, listening to College Dropout and Late Registration, I was just like, no, I don't think I like this. Like, I was way more like you, like into rock music. I loved Linkin Park. I was really into, I guess, just Eminem at that point when it came to hip hop.
He was great.
Yeah. It took me up until 808s to be like, oh.
Mm.
Mm. Well, so did you feel that your experience with Kanye at that point changed the kind of music you were looking to listen to or trying to listen to? Or
definitely. Okay. Definitely. Yeah, and a lot of it had to do with just my upbringing and my personality at the time. You know, like, and I don't want to stereotype, obviously, but the more Asian music that I listened to, the Chinese music, it was a lot of it was very emotional. It was very, just very heavy emotionally, and some would just classify it as like emo or something, honestly. but to me, it was great music. It was a lot of good melodies in it, and but very emotional, and a lot of it had to do with loss and breakup, you know, and heartbreak, things like that.
Yeah.
So it was very refreshing, honestly, to listen to someone like Kanye. And then after I listened to him, I listened to a lot more hip-hop. I looked at Lil Wayne the following year, you know, a couple other hip-hop artists that was popular at the time. But yeah, like it really made me open my eyes to, you know, like hip-hop as a genre, I think.
Nice. And did you connect with other hip-hop artists right away in that sense? Like, oh, I do like what Lil Wayne's doing. I do like what I'm...
Yeah, I definitely enjoy Lil Wayne. And a big part of it was just... With him and Kanye at the time, you know, they were so big. They were probably, you know, two of the best artists, hip-hop artists at the time. And they were so big that their music really hit me really hard because it was just so much confidence and so much braggadocio, you know. And it was very, it's for someone that, you know, grew up with no confidence and, you know, always kind of doubting himself, to listen to that is pretty refreshing. And it's, you know, it's a rush of emotion that that you enjoy listening to, because, you know, it's something that you don't experience often, maybe.
I think that's a really good point, because while their words aren't necessarily your words, right? Like, they're writing these things and you're just kind of repeating them as you get to know the music and listen to the songs.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something that kind of becomes like a, I don't think mantric is a word, but it becomes sort of like a mantra where you're repeating these things and start to feel like the energy of saying such confident things or hearing such confidence talk.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Especially for, you know, I was, 16, 17 at the time. You know, it was very important, you know, to have motivation, to have inspiration in your life.
Yeah.
Hip-hop definitely was a source of that for me, so.
That's awesome. And were you working on any creative endeavors yourself at the time?
I was not. I was, I'm not, you know, it kind of sucks, but at the time in high school, I was a bum. I was just a straight up bum. I didn't do anything. I went to school, got good grades, and that was it. After school, I just come home and just bum. I stayed in shape, or at least tried to. I played basketball or whatever, but
yeah.
Other than that, I was never on a sports team. I never did. I didn't do many extracurriculars. None of them really interest me. Where also, I just didn't really connect with the people in my high school that much. So there was really no motivation for me to, you know, to join these kind of groups.
Right.
So a lot of the time I spent by myself, you know, I'll listen to music, read or whatever. So
music then can become very meaningful.
Definitely.
Even more so because it's not just something that's like the soundtrack to your life, but it's something that is helping you look beyond kind of the high school world, which can be so limiting.
Yeah, exactly.
God, you mentioned being a bum, and it just makes me think back to like when I get home from school some days and watch TV from 2:30 to like 8:30, mm-hmm. and just be watching like Simpsons, Boy Meets World, like Home Improvement reruns, like all these things, and just like, what am I doing?
Yeah, I play a lot of video games at the time as well. I was a big Halo fan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, shout out to Halo. I still love Halo, so.
Right. Halo 2 multiplayer, Team Slayer.
Yeah, when I got an Xbox 360, like, I was the happiest kid in the world. And Halo 3 just killed it, so.
Halo 3 was a good one. Mm-hmm. Well, so when 808s came out, you were just sort of a year into your Kanye fandom. You loved Graduation, had gone back and listened to the other albums, and we're getting on board with that. Mm-hmm. Did 808s kind of weird you out when you first heard it in terms of that? Or from the background of music that you were talking about that was a little more emotional, was it something that connected you even more to Kanye?
Yeah, so I think with 808s, it was when I first heard the news of it and the concept and what it was going to be, I was definitely taken aback. I was definitely really surprised, but I think I was interested. I was really interested in what he could do. I wasn't a fan of autotune, I will say that. But I was willing to give him a chance with it, you know.
Yeah.
So it came out. First few times listening to it, it was really weird. Like, I just could not understand how he went from, you know, those soul beats and, you know, from what he did in Graduation to, you know, something that was so emotional and just so different, the drum techniques and everything. But after a while, I just kept listening to it. A lot of songs actually stuck out a lot because, you know, in high school I think I did get into my first relationship at the time, and I think I was leaving my first relationship, so, there were definitely some songs on that you know, I definitely felt, and I think over time I liked it a lot. And
I think that's one of my favorite things with talking to Kanye fans, when you get the rare treat of talking to like a serious Kanye fan, is their relationship moment with 808s. And just that one point, hopefully not multiple points, but at least that one point in their life where they were going through a breakup and 808s was there and just took on a whole different level of like interaction.
No, definitely.
What songs from 808s were the ones that were kind of sticking out to you?
Heartless was definitely the first one, I think. Yeah, that one. And I think I remember you guys did an episode on it, and I think you were saying about how, you know, it felt so kind of shallow and just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it feels like it's just kind of it's not that meaningful, and it's just kind of just this guy whining, complaining, right, about this relationship that didn't go his way. But I think the thing about it is that it just captures that moment so well, you know, that moment of sadness, and you know, I think, and that's what Kanye captures so well. He captures emotion,
yes,
onto his tracks better, I think, than almost any artist that I've listened to. And so for that song, it's like in the moment, you know, maybe like a week or two after a breakup, and you're devastated, you're lost, you're going back and forth, you know, you're saying like, oh, I don't need you, but at the same time, you know, I'm missing you so much. And it's that, and that's what you do after a breakup, isn't it? Like, if you think about it, we as humans, we go between that spectrum of emotion so much, because we're just so lost and so devastated after a breakup sometimes.
Yes, we do. I was just talking to a friend earlier about another mutual friend and a breakup that they had gone through. And they were like, yeah, how did you think they, how did they seem to you during that time? And I was like, well, he knew logically that, like, why they ended and why they should have ended. But, like, emotionally, he was saying he was still waking up every morning being like, I wish she was here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great point about that kind of tension, because we do have that moment of just, whether it's superficial or not, that truthful moment of, like, wanting to whine about a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially as, you know, a 17-year-old or 16-year-old. It's very easy to do that.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to all my, like, angsty poetry in high school, and just like, oh...
Oh yeah, I forgot you wrote poetry.
Oh no, yeah, it's... Sometimes I wish I forgot too, but it's...
No, I actually admire that a lot. It's I feel like something that we don't people don't do as much anymore as before.
Yeah, poetry is, I guess, the spirit of it's still there. It's just morphed into so many other things, like music. So many songs or poems. Kanye was doing a lot of Def Jam poetry from his song lyrics.
Right.
Well, so we get to 2010, the Taylor Swift, or 2009, the Taylor Swift stuff happens. What was your kind of reaction when that occurred?
I literally just shrugged my shoulders. Like, I remember, like, I wasn't even watching it. Or, like, I didn't really follow, you know, like, all the, like, award shows and things like that that much. I think I was honestly just maybe, like, on my computer and something. And then I was checking Facebook. And then everyone was talking about that, right? The MTV Awards. And everyone was saying, talking about Kanye. And the connotation didn't look good. So no. I asked my friend what happened. And I think he told me what happened. Then I saw a clip of it, like, later in the night. Probably on YouTube, like, right after I probably saw it. And I was just like, huh. I didn't really know how to take it. I mean, I was obviously a fan of him, and I was a fan of his music, and I didn't really know him that well as a person. I think I only really knew him through the music, and from what I heard through the music, he sounds like a good guy, you know, like, he sounds like a very relatable guy, a guy who's very honest with his emotions, very, very introspective, you know. So I was like, huh, I think maybe he's just having an off day or something.
Right.
I really didn't, it wasn't a big deal to me, like, whatsoever, you know.
You were willing to give him the benefit of the doubts and just be like, well, that was a thing that happened, like, okay. But
yeah, and I think if anything, it was just like, why does everyone care so much about Taylor Swift as a celebrity? You know, it's like, I don't even watch this award show, and most people probably don't, you know, honestly. Like, people have other things to do in their lives and watch award shows and follow this, but the media is going to give us the story saying how Kanye is an asshole. And from then on, everyone knows, oh, yeah, he's that asshole that to Taylor, even though they don't really care. Like, they don't even know who they are as people, but they're just going to judge based on what the media tells them.
I think that's such a good point about what Kanye's music really gets into from 808s on, with talking about, even Graduation on, talking about celebrity and that perception of celebrity. It's and we saw it with the Famous video, right? With all the people in bed and the camera kind of roving over them in that voyeuristic way. Like, right. That's what we do with celebrities. And it's like, we could not give two shits about them as people, but, like, we're obsessed with everything that they do.
Yeah, no. It's crazy. Just going back to that Taylor Swift incident, I honestly didn't think it should have been that big. You know, it's... And especially with Kanye, or like any of these big celebrities, it's they, I don't know why they get scrutinized so much, but I can understand the emotion of it and how, you know, people sympathizing with Taylor. But still, it's why you gotta crucify Kanye for something that's seemingly like, is so, he's a rapper, you know, like rappers say shit all the time on songs.
Yeah.
But to do it on national TV, like, oh, then we're gonna have to crucify him, I guess. It's like, you can say whatever on the song, but if you actually do it on TV, if you do something remotely bad, we're gonna crucify you.
How dare he? Yeah, and just like the self-righteousness that so many people have, or like the anger people have towards him for that, is impressive.
Yeah.
It's also, you said during that time you didn't really know much about Kanye as a person. Was there a moment where you started paying more attention to who he was, or started caring more about who he was and not just the music? Or is it still kind of something where it's just like, well, I know some things about him, but I just care about the music?
So all of that really changed in terms of trying to get to see who he is as a person. At one point, it was probably maybe just a year or two ago, right? And I was listening to his older albums. I was listening to his entire catalog, really, up until Yeezus, and I just realized kind of this is his artistry is very unique. And a lot of times, in order to understand it and to be able to see his perspective on his own songs, you know, you have to understand what he was going through at that time of his life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really from there that I started kind of, sometimes I'll look into, like, you know, what he was doing back when he was making 808s, where when he was making Dark Fantasy. And it's all very interesting because it all really does connect. It makes sense. You know, his music makes sense in relation to the artist. Just the same way that, you know, some of the greatest artists in human history, you know, some of the greatest writers, they're inspired by their own life, you know, the right. Like, one of my favorite books, a shout out to that book, because it's one of the best books, I think, ever. It's A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man.
Hell yeah.
By James Joyce. And that it's pretty much an autobiography, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote as a novel, but it's completely inspired by his own life, and it, you know, it's one of the best novels I think ever. So,
God, it's such good writing. There's still like mm-hmm. one moment in there that lives with me. It's and like 3/4 of the way in, when he's finally at school as like the high school, and he's staring at this girl, and he's obsessed with her and keeps watching her, but then one day he sees her and just realizes that he may have had the wrong impression of her the entire time. And he thinks to himself, what if her heart were simple like a bird's heart, simple and willful like a bird's heart? And that's just always been like one of the top five most beautiful things I've ever read.
Yeah, no, I'll have to go back and read that again.
Yeah, it's right before he writes like the big poem where he like wakes up in the morning and is just like and starts writing poetry.
Right.
But yeah, like that's a great point, that so many artists really do take the events from their life and hyperbolize them. they heighten them and make them a little greater than what's there. But if you look behind the curtain a little bit, you see that it's not very far off from what they actually experienced.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Kanye is a, you know, he's constantly inspired, you know, by other people in history. And, you know, even I was looking into Pablo Picasso, and you know, he's had quite the interesting life himself. So, and his art actually reflects a lot of the events that occurred in his life as well. A lot of adultery, I think. Mostly.
Yeah, Picasso was a bit of a diva, wasn't he?
Oh my goodness. It's like, I think Kanye is maybe, just as a human, he's might be a little bit better than Picasso, actually.
It doesn't seem like he's upset as many people justifiably as Picasso may have.
But Picasso is still iconic, you know? Like that's the point is, you know, it's the art that lives through time. We'll remember the art.
Absolutely. And then you go back and read about the person, you're just like, gross. But that art's amazing. Well, so My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy comes out. Do you immediately eat it up?
Yeah. I was listening to it a good amount. Realized that he's gone on a really interesting direction. Really unexpected. I thought he would, if anything, I think most people expect him to go back to the college series, right?
Right, especially after 808's got such a weird reception.
Mm-hmm, right. So yeah, I was kind of expecting, you know, just bring back old Kanye. Like, I'll be pretty happy with that, you know? But looking back at it, I'm really glad he went in the maximalist direction with his music. And I go back and I re-listen to Dark Fantasy so much within the past two or three years. And I just hear things that, you know, that I don't even notice the first few times, or, you know, the first 100 times. I'll hear things and I'm like, wow, that's really interesting. And I know that he put that there probably for a reason, you know. It's the layering of his music and the story that he's telling through that album is fantastic, I think. Scary.
Today's episode of Watching the Throne is brought to you by Audible.
And Audible is offering Watching the Throne listeners a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. The website is www.audibletrial.com/WTT.
Yeah, and of course there are, you know, thousands upon thousands of books to choose from on there. I would personally recommend the David Lynch biography called The Man from Another Place, if you're into that. And there's plenty, actually, I was just looking through there. If you just search Kanye West, there's plenty of stuff to search through and learn about Kanye.
I actually have never thought about looking for Kanye stuff on Audible. I always, I use Audible now for all my nonfiction reading. I'll still read fiction in the book form, but I've been using it for a lot of like business reading, for a lot of like neuroscience and like personal developments. So recently I've been listening to Traction, which is a book for startups and looking at the different realms of traction for startups.
Cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, so if you're into any of that, again, it's www.audibletrial.com/WTT. And if you do that, it's basically like giving us a free donation. It'll get you a free book on Audible, and it kind of just helps everyone out.
Yeah, it's would really appreciate you taking the time to look it out. To look it up, because it really does help us. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Scary.
Now, for you, how much are lyrics important to you, and how much is the production important to you from like a technical perspective? Like, not just like I enjoy this, but paying attention to, I guess, the specifics of the word choice, or like the technique of the word choice, or the technique of the music. Because I know for me, I don't know anything about music. So I hear the music and I'm just like, I like this, I don't like this, but I can't really speak to it on like the deeper end of like, he's doing really interesting things. Is that something that for you, the music is just as important as the lyrics?
That's very interesting, because that's something that it really dictates what your taste is in music. Oftentimes, you know, some people are going to be more attracted to the beats, right? And then the initial sound of the sonics of the music. And other people will be attracted to the lyricism and the rhymes and the techniques. And for me, I try to just do 50-50, honestly. You know, what makes a good song a good song? For me, most importantly, is just your message behind it. And what is it that you're trying to tell your audience? And you can do a great job with that using great production. And you can also do a great job with that with just some with great lyricism, you know, to fit that message. So if you can put those two things together, like, those are probably the best hip-hop songs in my mind. You know, like, it's everything just comes together, and it's just a masterful track. And I think Kanye has a lot of those, honestly.
As you're saying, like, the message behind the songs, that's one of the things that always amazes me the most about Kanye, is how diverse the messages are. To where, like, what you're getting on Gold Digger is not repeated necessarily across, like, 7 albums.
Oh yeah. And yeah, that's definitely, I think, his strongest attribute. You know, it's just that he's not willing to compromise and not willing to just take the easy route and just do what has been proven successful. He's always willing to take chances.
Right, he takes the Yeezy route. God, that was so cheesy, it hurt. So, 808s, or not 808s, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, you said you've been listening to it a lot again the last couple of years. Right. Have you found a difference in the songs that you were loving in, like, the first year or two after it came out and the songs that you're loving now, or is it pretty much the same?
Yeah, no, I think listening to it more and more, just more closely, it seems like I like every song. At first, it was really just the songs that kind of stood out a lot. So Dark Fantasy, I've always liked. I thought that was a good song. Then Power was a big one. All of the Lights, you know, it was just crazy, crazy production on that. So Monster was always good. A lot of times I would listen to hip hop for working out. So I would usually have those songs on the playlist. So they come up often. But listening to it again, I realized a lot of the emotional songs that he has on that are very, very well done. Blame Game, Lost in the World, Runaway, obviously. the outro, Who Will Survive America, it's ridiculous. You know, this guy... I want to talk about Dark Fantasy right now because it was that at that point when he made that album... I think he definitely made a jump with his music, because what he really did was take his best attributes of his first 4 albums and put it together into essentially a work of art. You know, I would say maybe even a storybook, a novel. Like his you know, it's his. He put it all together. He put together all his skills, his best attributes, and there's great lyricism and there's great production, grand production, and. If I were to describe his music in that album, I would just say it's cinematic. It's something. I could listen to it and I could see a movie in my head. You know, it's crazy.
It just, as you're describing it, I'm just sitting here with this huge smile on my face, thinking about, like, how much I love that album.
Yeah.
And what you're saying about the emotional tracks, I think that's something that's jumped out to me over the years. Is like, I'd always kind of liked Gorgeous and Hell of a Life. But I feel like the last 2 years, I've just, those tracks have kind of catapulted in my personal rankings of Kanye songs.
Yes, definitely. I've always liked Hell of a Life. Like that, working out to that song is always good. Gorgeous, it's, the thing is about Gorgeous is that the beat was kind of repetitive, right? So it didn't stand out to me as much. And I never really took a close listen to the lyrics until recently, and... and when I did, I was like, wow, these lyrics are on point.
Right? Like,
yeah, those are some of his best bars, I think, for sure.
Fucking Kanye.
Just so many quotable lines in that. I love it.
And then Who Will Survive in America? That was a song, like, I remember the first time I listened to the album, and I'm just hearing Who Will Survive in America, I was like, that was strange. Yes. Like, for a long time, I just hit skip as soon as Lost in the World ended.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Now it's at
Kanye's not even on it. Like, what?
Right, like, get this out of here.
Yeah.
And now it's to the point where, like, I look forward to it. Yes. Like, give me that moment of, like, no applause. And how brutal that is at the end of this, like, extremely emotional journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, like, what an ending, you know? Like, I think it just caps off. And the way it transitions from Lost in the World into that sample. The way he cut up that sample, too. And at the very end, literally, like, the last seconds of that track, you hear the drums get faster and faster, and it builds up. And it's so cinematic in my mind.
I love Kanye. So a couple years go by. We don't really get... we get Watch the Throne. And were you as into Watch the Throne as the rest of Kanye's albums?
Oh, definitely. I have this one friend who's a huge hip-hop head. He's on schedule with everything. So all the new albums that come out, he's always on top of it. So... Watch the Throne, we were both bumping that so much that summer, 2011.
Yeah, that was a good summer.
Yeah, that album was just dope. Yeah, it was really the best of Jay-Z and the best of Kanye in one.
That's you know, from listening to the show, I'm sure you're aware of, like, criticisms we've had of Jay-Z in the past, just being maybe too focused on the braggadocio, like too repetitive in a lot of ways. But as huge of a Kanye fan as I am, like, I almost feel like I prefer Jay-Z on so many of the Watch the Throne tracks, which always throws me.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think for Watch the Throne, I think lyrically it's easier to say that he didn't do better than Kanye on that. But Kanye, he had his, like, signature moments, I think, where he would just really... His lyrics might not technically be the most impressive, but kind of... He has, like, those moments that are just so quotable, you know, just for the fans, for, the, like, you know, for the stadium.
Right.
You know, I think it was so good.
Like, he's just coming in with those points where it's just like, damn, yay. Damn.
Mm-hmm. Or it's just it fits the meaning of the song, you know, like he's the type of character or the type of rapper to not take himself that seriously. You know, like he doesn't have to have a perfect 15 or 16 bars. You know, he sticks to just kind of getting his personality out. He doesn't take himself that seriously on that album, I don't think.
No, right, which I feel like a lot of non-album Kanye, like his guest spots, mm-hmm. are often like a little more relaxed Kanye, a little more just like, this is off the top of my head.
Definitely.
And Watch the Throne, right, it's not maybe as perfect in places, but he still does so many interesting things to where you're just like, that's really fascinating.
The thing is, he delivers his bars in a very good way. I think Watch the Throne was just, it got to that point where I realized his bars were good. Like, I loved them in Watch the Throne. I actually thought they were just as good as Jay-Z's, in my opinion.
Hell yeah. Well, and that had always been one of the main complaints about Kanye, right? From people that were really into hip-hop and the art of hip-hop, was that Kanye, kind of his rap technique, was it at the same level as some other people, right?
I think that's definitely his biggest criticism, especially with Pablo. Especially with the most recent album. That's definitely a heavy criticism there.
It's strange to me because you had mentioned earlier, like, if you know something, then you might have a different reaction to it than if you don't know. So if somebody knows way too much about basketball, then they might think somebody hitting 7 free throws out of 10 isn't as impressive as... Mm-hmm. Or, like, they might hate their form. Or, like, me with literature, so many people love the book The Art of Fielding. And because I love baseball, they're like, oh, you should read Art of Fielding. It's so good, and it's baseball. And I'm like, I try to read the first paragraph, and I want to punch myself in the face until I'm concussed because me as a writer thinks that the writing's like shitty, but is that really the truth?
And that's the thing about music and art, that you know, it's up to interpretation. It's meant to be up to interpretation. So
definitely. So we go from Watch the Throne then to Yeezus, of all things. And Yeezus was like 808. It's like very divisive in terms of the sound. And I'm a God just sent people on edge. It was like nails on a chalkboard to people. Yeah. What was your response to Yeezus when it came out?
The thing about his music is I've learned over time to be try to be open-minded about it, you know. So when he does do something like Yeezus and just changes his sonic palette again, it definitely takes a while to get used to. I did like Blood on the Leaves a lot. I thought that was just off the top great.
Yes.
New Slaves, you know, once you, the thing is, I love your show because you look at the lyrics so closely, and I think when you do look at New Slaves, I Am the God, I Am a God, you look at those songs and the message, and what he's actually trying to say versus what you think he's saying. he makes some good points, and he does have bars, I think, especially on I Am a God. Like that, he has that one verse that's really good.
Yeah,
that's underrated.
It has such a cool flow to it.
It does. It does. The beat was so electronic, but it just went together pretty well. definitely different. I love that he kind of embraced, it's more of a trap sound, I guess, if anything. Just really harsh and industrial as well, I guess. He embraced it, and he made it into a concept album as well, which was fantastic. He made it into, and I know you guys are talking about it on the show, it's essentially just a story, you know. It's
right,
the like, story of Yeezus.
Yeah, just a nice beginning, middle, and end with like some finding heart a little bit throughout the journey.
Right. And speaking on that, can I ask you something real quick?
Yeah, please.
So I don't know how familiar you are with Down 2.
I've had Yeezus playing in my car for the last 6 months, so pretty well versed.
Oh yeah. So one thing that I've heard is that at the very end of that song, when you thought the song ended, but then he goes back and says, you know, Jerome's in the house. When he says that line, I heard people say that that's like a shout out or kind of like a wink wink to the audience, like he's breaking, I think, the fourth wall. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, that's definitely would be the phrase. Like it's him stepping out of the
character, out of the character from the story and acknowledging, you know, that it's kind of a setup or a play or whatever that he's doing with Yeezus.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point, because it's something that Travis had brought up to me I think 2.5 years ago, saying that he really thought Jerome's in the House, Watch Your Mouth could change the entire context of the album, or at least change the context of Bound 2.
I think it might. I think it's not just Bound 2. I think it's the whole album. Because you guys put the album together, you know it's a story, right? Like it's supposed to go in that order and supposed to have that beginning, middle, and end. And at the very end, I think he specifically chose the very end of the album to do that. Obviously,
yeah, that's that's something that I'm gonna have to do a little bit more research. Yeah,
me too. Very interesting.
Heavy thought on. I'm looking at the Genius annotation now. And I think what they're saying, that Kanye may be winking at his audience, indicating that he understands the character he plays on records is just a persona and not necessarily his authentic self. I definitely think that's in line with what we've been saying I guess just what we were saying earlier about art in general, right? Like, this isn't Kanye, but a heightened version of Kanye.
Definitely.
And maybe here he is taking the time to kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'll have to look into that. But that'll definitely be something we cover when eventually we get to the Bound 2 episode. But I think there's definitely something very interesting to talk about with that point.
Yeah. And with his music, I would never put it past him to do something like that.
No, not at all. Which is what makes me so happy about his music is that, like, you know, at first I was kind of hesitant to think that, is he doing all these things on all these albums? Is he that kind of artist? But then realizing that he is and that he does, it's exciting. Just the same way that you wouldn't think that a novelist or a poet or a filmmaker wasn't doing these things on purpose.
Right, right. And they do. They do, you know. The best directors out there, the best writers, they do all these things at the same time. And Kanye, the way he is able to incorporate that into music, into sonics, is just very impressive.
Yeah. Well, so do you have thoughts on the Jeromes in the House, Watch Your Mouth that you want to share?
Yeah, no, I think I'm not that sure about it myself, because it's a reference, I think, to a TV show, and it's not a show that I watched or, you know, I haven't seen it. So
yeah, Martin was a very interesting show with Martin Lawrence. I actually used to watch it before bed. It would be on at like 10 or 10:30 or 11.
Interesting.
And I would just catch episodes like maybe once a month or a couple every like a couple times a month. And I always thought it was hilarious, but it's also kind of like such a weird show. So this is something that I'm interested like very much in diving into, because any reference to Martin, fantastic in my book.
Yeah. And I wonder why specifically that line itself is an indication of, you know, speaking directly to the audience. You know?
Yeah.
Like, why Jerome in the House?
Or... Right. Especially with the title of Bound 2. And there's this kind of, like, paranoia that's now coming into the picture.
Right.
I think Travis's initial theory was something to do with, like, media scrutiny as well. Is that Jerome could be getting at, like, I guess, to put it in more Kanye terms, like, the wolves. So it's almost like becoming aware of the wolf that's around you, or just how people are kind of out to get you. But I don't know. We'll probably end up talking about it for like 2, 3, maybe 4 hours.
Yeah. You guys tend to do that.
We do. It's very disturbing. Like, talk about people being obsessed with celebrity, and then we have this huge Kanye podcast. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So Yeezus came out, and you were kind of into it at first, but sort of not sure. Was there a tipping point for you where you're just like, I love this?
Yeah, once I listened to it as a whole, you know, instead of listening to just individual songs, listening to, you know, from front to back, kind of seeing the whole picture, I learned to appreciate it a lot, and I thought it was a very well done piece of work.
And was it right away that you saw the kind of narrative elements to it, or was it something that was maybe a year down the road? Or
it was definitely recently that I, like, even realized that. but once you put it together, it makes perfect sense. It's really split into three acts, I think, almost perfectly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was actually arguing with somebody. I don't know if you go on R. Kanye. But I was arguing with somebody on R. Kanye about Yeezus, and they were telling me how disjointed they thought it was, because if you look at the first four tracks, they're like one style of music, and then tracks 5 through 8 or 5 through 9 are a completely different style of music, and then the end is like kind of similar to the first. And I was like, yeah, that's because of the narrative arc. Like, you just described the three acts of the narrative. Like, that's evidence. That's not evidence.
Yeah, no, there's definitely... most people don't realize things like that, you know? But there's definitely some genius to his madness.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, it's because we're so used to... Well, maybe that's simplifying it too much, but I feel like a lot of people, the expectation for music is just it's a collection of songs and an album. Yeah, and definitely. That's what people are used to getting, especially from pop acts like
right.
people view Kanye as. Mm-hmm. So for him not to announce it's a concept album and for people to then claim it is a concept album, I could see why some people would want or like push back against that.
Yeah. And it's yeah, because he does have so many hits. You know, that's the thing about him is that most people would just know him for the big hits that he has and think of him as, you know, an artist who tries to go out and tries to get hits. But
right, like Drake, like Lil Wayne, like Jay-Z.
Right. But to the contrary, I think he actually does the exact opposite.
Yeah, I agree with that. I very much agree with that. Well, then... Life of Pablo.
Yeah, Pablo.
Pablo. What was, did you go to a theater for the Madison Square Garden thing? Did you watch online?
Oh, yeah, I think I watched it online after work.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was the kind of initial feelings about the music?
I thought it was very, very familiar. You know, it's very kind of unique to his style, right? It's definitely in line with what he does. But I think definitely all the soul samples with the gospel feel to it definitely threw me off a bit. Especially Ultralight Beam. I thought he would honestly. The whole time when I saw that track list, I thought Ultralight Beam was gonna be like on site.
Oh.
I thought he was gonna come out and just start throwing bars, you know. At people, and turns out it was the exact opposite. So definitely first song like threw me off. I was like, oh, okay, so it's a singing song, and Kanye doesn't even rap on it.
No. Right. He just says few things and is like, okay, Chance, you go.
Yeah, but obviously Chance killed it, and you know, he deserves it. He's having a fantastic year. He killed it. It was a great opener. The emotion on that first track was fantastic to start off an album.
Yeah, like the first time I heard it, I just had so many goosebumps by the end when they're just yelling out like faith.
Yeah.
War.
No, definitely.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm really happy that it did get nominated for a few Grammys. I actually did not see that coming at all.
No, at this point, I expect Kanye to either be, like, shunned entirely or, like, embraced completely.
Yeah, and it's funny that it was nominated in, the rap song category, right? When Kanye doesn't even rap on it.
Yeah, how ridiculous is that?
Yeah, but Chance versus Fantastic, and if you want to talk about the specifics of, you know, that rapping versus not rapping, you know, Hotline Bling is nominated, and it's... Is there any rapping in that?
No.
Yeah, exactly. So if Drake wins that category, man.
That's such a weird album. I still have only heard like 3 or 4 songs from that album. And I think all of them were, And I think all of them were singing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, I think probably half the album was pretty much singing. Maybe not that much, but... The rapping was definitely underwhelming for a lot of people. Like my best friend, the one I mentioned earlier, he completely hates that album. He makes it very, very well known that he does. I think it's definitely subpar. Definitely a subpar album. Even he's done much better, I thought, with Take Care was actually a good album, in my opinion. Nothing Was the Same was still good. And then after that I think he just got a little too commercial. With Views, he was really, and it was successful, you know, like you can't say it's not a successful album. It sold a lot, and his point was trying to appeal to everyone, you know. and he did that. He had Hotline Bling that appealed, and One Dance that appealed to a completely different demographic, and that opened his career up a lot more.
Yeah, it's true. If Drake's doing what's like best for Drake as an artist, like
he definitely is. he knows how to take care of himself.
Right, and like can't blame the man for that.
Right, right. But yeah, no. Back to Pablo. I thought the albums were very well done, and people complain about thinking that's unpolished, where it was rushed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty big complaints of it. And I do think that if he did take a little more time, I think it could have came out better. And I think it could have made a much bigger impact. And I think I also probably would have, it would have just gotten better, like critical acclaim, I think, if he took more time on it. But we can see like the message behind it and the story that he's telling in that one. And it's a really good one.
Yes. Yes, it is. Which areas do you think would have benefited the most from taking a little bit more time? Like, because again, how I said before, like I'm not one that really knows the in and outs of production, so I just hear the music and think like I like this, I like what mm-hmm. this is doing in terms of the lyrics, but I don't know anything about like the mixing, the engineering. So when people are saying, you know, it's spotty, it feels rushed in these spots, I don't have the same ear for that, the way that if I told somebody that writing was using too many adverbs, they'd maybe be like, well, maybe. So where do you think the areas that was kind of weak or could have benefited from the more time?
With Pablo, I would say it's pretty much there. I think I will say I'm not sure about the track list. The way that he put like 5 bonus songs on the end of the actual story that he was telling.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought it would have been more effective if he just did, you know, that something similar to that original track list of 11 songs, right? But that being said, I think overall, I think it was really in the details, because the structure is there, you know. The way that it goes from Father Stretch My Hands to Famous, you know, to Feedback, I think the structures are definitely there. And I think if he just added, took a little more time, like listened to it a bit more and just added a few details here and there, it would have been better. For example, I think on part 2, when he has that one verse at the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to that again recently, and I was thinking, if he did that verse and had like a more chaotic / like dramatic background to that, it would sound so just like haunting, you know, and kind of it would just stand out more, I think, for that section of the song.
I like that. Like something that a little bit in the way that like Black Skinhead had kind of the mm-hmm. the intensity to the right. track that matched the lyrics.
It just jumps out at you, right?
Mm.
And the thing about that verse, I actually think that verse is very underrated. Like, I think that verse is a good verse because, you know, he talks about some deep stuff on that one. And if he made the background so that there's like some like screeching violins or some, you know, something crazy like that, just to make it cinematic and to just really, you can feel the intensity of that verse. So just things like that. Like, I think FML, maybe Wolves, he could have changed a bit as well. So yeah, overall it's very good it's still a very good project, so can't complain.
Yes it is. Yeah, it would be interesting to see, like, had he taken another month or 2 months, would there have been changes that he made that were, I mean, I feel like any artist would say that, like, yeah, if I had more time on something, of course there are more things that I would have changed or not changed, but at some point you just got to stop and put it out there.
Right.
But I'm curious if there were anything big that he would make at that point rather than just kind of a little bit of the fine-tuning. Or if it was just fine-tuning, as you're saying, how much of a difference would that have made in just making these songs feel like a little more three-dimensional?
Right. Yeah. It's, overall, like, I'm very satisfied with it. So, and it's gotten, I think it's on a couple of top 10, top 5 lists. So,
as it damn well should be.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, is the music still having like an impact for you in terms of like providing confidence, inspiring you, and just in your pursuits in life, like, or is it just kind of stuff that you throw on and enjoy?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I just really have to go back to the emotion, right, of his music, and it's when I listen to it, really, it feels like an exploration of just, you know, humanity, and, you know, who we are as human beings and the different things that we can feel inside and no one knows about, you know, it's just us. I do a lot of driving because I'm in a long distance relationship, so I'm constantly driving, and when I'm like listening to something, and, you know, you understand the emotion, you understand the extremes that some people go through, and no one captures that better than Kanye does. You know, just sometimes, you know, he'll have anger. Sometimes he'll have a lot of sadness and despair and loneliness. You know, it's crazy. You know, everything is there. Everything is there. All the human emotions that one could feel and one could relate to.
And I think Pablo really adds to that.
It does.
Especially, like, you think about Real Friends and Wolves and that sense of, like, betrayal and, like, fear. Like, on Wolves, there's such, like, fear of, like, self, fear of others, and who.
Right. And the way, and another thing is I love the way that that album was structured, right? So it's crazy. Like, people say that that album's incoherent. I'm just like, how you go from Father Touch My Hands and Famous, right? It's like those extreme moments of feeling at a high, right? And just extreme confidence, to moments like FML, Real Friends, and Wolves, right? The shift in emotion is ridiculous.
Right, like in narrative training, like when you're learning about storytelling and writing, it's commonly called change in charge. So you set up a charge that's either positive or negative, or it starts with hate and ends with love. It starts with fear and ends with confidence, like those kinds of binaries. And exactly what you're saying, you see that change in charge from the beginning of the album to the end of the album.
Right.
Well, top 5 Kanye songs?
This is a really tough one. I would have to say, Sasha, just list out 5.
Yeah. If you want to talk about them as you list them, by all means.
Nah, I think I do want to talk about the last one though.
Okay.
So it'll have to be Jesus Walks, Stronger, Hold My Liquor. Lost in the World, and the last one would be Pinocchio Story.
Oh shit. All right.
For that one, it's, I don't know if you've heard or seen the performance that he did last year at the Hollywood Bowl.
No, I need to watch that.
Yeah, I didn't even get to see it until recently, but I've been listening to like a recording of it. Like, someone recorded it, and it was in pretty solid quality, right? So he closed out that show with Pinocchio Story, which I thought at first was just a bonus track on 808s. You know, like, I didn't think it was like
the actual finale.
Like, I didn't think it was even meant to be on the album. Like, at first I preferred that it wasn't on the album, I think. But he closed the show with that song, which surprised me a bit. But, you know, I was listening to it, and it was an extended version. He redid some parts of it. It was really long. It was like almost 10 minutes long.
Whoa.
But the instrumentation he uses on it starts out with a lot of cellos, violins, just fantastic, very emotional. And it was after that performance that I understood what that song was about, and I thought he did a great job, just, again, capturing his emotions in that song.
So that's a song then that for you probably wasn't even on your top five until very recently, and now it's there.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely underrated, and it's ironic because that song speaks on celebrity, right? It speaks on his status as a celebrity, and you know, his sadness because of that. And yeah, no, I think it's ironic because everyone, he's known for certain things, and people don't realize that, you know, he is very introspective, and it is different for him than all the other people judging him.
Right, like this is the same guy that if you listen to College Dropout, Late Registration, and Graduation, you're just like, this guy loves being a celebrity. He's so happy with this, and like he thinks it's awesome. But then by the time you get to 808s and you're listening to Pinocchio's story, you're just like, this guy hates celebrity. Like, he's cursed.
No, and that's exactly what the song's about. He is cursed. No, it's for him, you know, he's had a hard time with it, and especially the passing of his mom and everything, so.
Yeah, that shit is never, never easy.
Right, and it's been a central theme of his albums, you know, since Dark Fantasy on, I think.
Yeah, and just to think about on Wolves, where he has that line about, if your mama knew now how you turned out, you're too wild. Just like, oh, that's that kind of self-analysis and self-confrontation is so brutal.
It really is, yeah. It's especially from his standpoint, where he's coming from, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, any final words, any final thoughts, any last topics you want to discuss?
I think I'm good. One thing I do want to say is we should definitely cut this, because this is over an hour long.
that's fine by our standards.
I definitely thought we were just going to do like, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, but...
Yeah, it was a good conversation. You had a lot of great things.
Oh yeah, definitely. It was like, I've always been like, just listening to you guys talk, I've always been really excited to just have a conversation with you guys about all things Kanye and all things not Kanye.
Well, I'm glad we could have that. Sorry Travis couldn't be here. He's an awful person, but
No, we're all just, you know, human beings. we're all just doing the best we can, so.
Right, you just want everybody to be happy in the new year, as Kanye would say.
Oh my goodness, I can't. You saw that?
Yeah.
I saw that too. I was like, yeah, he would definitely say that.
He would.
Like, that's what he wants. That's really what he wants sometimes.
That's our yay.
It is. He's the man of the people. But however, everyone's thinking he's going crazy just because he dyed his hair. And I'm just like,
Calm down. Like, people can dye their hair.
Yeah, like, Chris Brown dyes his hair all the time. Frank Ocean dyes his hair. Oh, shout out to Frank Ocean, by the way. One of definitely top three artists for me.
Frank's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, like, I actually, we should just change this into a Frank Ocean podcast, I think.
Yeah, do you want to? Let's do it. So all right, let's, what was your first reaction to Channel Orange?
start over again.
Yeah, oh god. We'd both pass out by the time we were finished talking.
Ist dein Lieblingspodcast schon wieder vorbei? Kein Problem. Dann geh in die Verlängerung mit 66% mehr Daten bei Aldi Talk für alle Neu- und Bestandskunden. Hol dir dein Kombipaket mit 25, 50 oder 100 GB inklusive 5G und Allnet Flat schon ab 8,99 €. Oder hol dir für nur 1 Euro mehr Tarife, bei denen du unendlich Daten kostenlos nachbuchen kannst. Jetzt auf aldi-talk.de oder in der Aldi Talk App. Aldi. Gutes für alle.